Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the host or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stannard.
Good morning, New Jersey's 9th District. Billy, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Well, let's get this started. Tell us who Billy is. And how did you get to where you are now?
All right, well, my name is Billy Prampa. I'm 31 years old, and I'm from Paterson, New Jersey. I've lived here my entire life. And the way that I got here was quite interesting. My parents are originally from Ghana, West Africa. And in the early 1980s, they came to the United States, and they gave birth to me in 1989. Now, they came to the United States legally. They came through the process. They swore an oath to become American citizens, and they're very proud, happy people. They're very proud to be American citizens. And when I was born, I grew up my entire life in Paterson, just as a regular kid in the inner city. I'm a little bit rough. I'm not too good of an education in our community at the time. There's a lot of gang violence. But despite that, I was able to navigate accordingly. And when I was 18 years old, after getting out of high school, I decided to join the military and serve in the United States Air Force, where I acted as a aerospace ground equipment journeyman. And I was stationed at RAF Mildenhall, United Kingdom for 2 years before I decided to return to the United States. At that time, Barack Obama was doing what I believe was completely unconstitutional and illegal. We were deploying bombs in Libya, in Northern Africa. This was during the time of the Arab Spring, and he's telling the American citizens at home that he was doing this to create a humanitarian no-fly zone over Libya, essentially to prevent Gaddafi from bombing his people, which was nonsense. But by him doing this, it destabilized that country and led for the remnants of al-Qaeda that we've been fighting for years, and the members of al-Nusra and other terrorist cells to come together, and they created ISIS in Libya. And once they seized Libya, they began moving north into Syria. And I was there at the height of this, around early 2010, and I saw that what we were doing was wrong. This is not what I signed up for. I didn't want our troops overseas rattling bees' nests and doing what we were doing. And I requested an early release from the military, which I eventually granted, and I returned back home to the United States. Now, prior to this, I was never really deeply political, but I guess you could say I was a Democrat because I voted for Barack Obama in 2008. I thought he was going to be the guy, and he was one of the main motivating factors as to why I got into politics. But despite being in there and seeing what our military was doing, I thought, you know, maybe coming back home, I'd be better suited at home than fighting this war that Obama's been dragging us into. But when I came home, things were very different. You know, after leaving England and coming home, I even got culture shock coming back to the United States because I didn't recognize how much had changed in the 2 years that I've been gone. But what had happened was many people were believing completely different ideologies. People were looking for free college, free healthcare, free this, free that, you name it. A lot of people were, and at the time I didn't necessarily know that this is what socialism was, although I've heard about it. I've had mentors and teachers in the past tell me about socialism, but I didn't know that these kinds of a concept were socialist in nature. So when I moved to Astoria, Queens, I ended up moving back there when I came back from the military. I ended up working for John F. Kennedy Airport, doing the same thing, essentially, that I was doing in the military. I ended up sharing an apartment with a guy named Nick that lived in, initially in Ozone Park, but then we moved to Astoria later on. But Nick was a socialist, and it was the first time I'd ever met a socialist and didn't really know too much about it. And the way I knew he was a socialist was when I walked into his apartment for the first time, he had this huge hammer and sickle flag on his wall. He had a bunch of these books about different Marxist communist scholars, Karl Marx, Trotsky, and so forth. And after 7 weeks of hanging out with this kid, I almost thought that I was a socialist, you know. And at this point, I'm thinking I'm Democrat. I'm thinking that these are all the right things to do, like, you know, raise the minimum wage, free health care for all, free rent for all. I was believing all of this stuff. And Nick eventually said, hey, you know, I think you should come with me to a rally that we're doing. And it was a rally that was happening in some cathedral in Manhattan. And this event, they're talking about how they're going to bring about this, I guess, for lack of a better term, a socialist utopia in the United States. And all these things sound really, really good. They sound like good ideas. You know, who wouldn't want, you know, all these free things? And the one thing that I couldn't wrap my head around was, how on earth are we going to pay for this? And I turned to my left, and there's a young girl that's sitting there, and she was very, you know, passionate about everything that's going on. And I'm like, hey, this is a really cool idea this guy's talking about, but how are we gonna pay for this? And she very seriously looked at me, and she says, what do you mean, how are we gonna pay for this? We're going to eat the rich. And she was so serious about this, very serious. We're going to eat the rich. We're gonna tax the rich. We're gonna take all their money, and we're gonna put this into society so we could bring equality amongst people. And I'm like, you mean like literally eat the rich? You mean like just like kind of the sugar? Like, no, yes, we're going to eat them. And I didn't know whether to take that as her being sarcastic or being dead serious, but if this is what she was believing, I started to question, there doesn't seem to be a real tangible way that they're going to create this kind of utopia. And I was thinking I was a Democrat. Some of the people I met in this audience were Democrats or said they were Democrats. Some of these people said they were communists. Some of them said that they were socialists. And I started questioning myself, like, huh, if these are what these people are talking about, I kind of wonder what, you know, the Republicans are talking about or what the other side is talking about. Are they as crazy as they think they are? And I always thought of them as a, you know what society tells you, the bunch of racist people with the Confederate flag who hate black people, and that's why they vote the way that they vote. But it reminded me of the conversation I had with my friend Dan, I met back in high school before going into the military. He was a libertarian, and he was telling me about Ron Paul. And when he was telling me about Ron Paul, I did not want to hear about him at the time, because I just looked at him like he was like just some old dude talking about boring stuff, and he's a Republican, all his policies don't help me because I'm black, and I kind of subscribe to all this nonsense. But you fast forward to this day, I come back from this event, and Ron Paul was the only Republican that I'd ever known. And I decided to go on Google and start researching what Ron Paul was all about. And I sat there and stomached some of those speeches, and I began to understand that there's a lot more going on in the world that I'm not even totally aware of. You know, the reason why wars go the way they go, the reason why we spend so much money in foreign countries, the reason why no matter how much money we print, we're never going to get out of debt, no matter how many government programs or welfare programs or anything the government promises, they can either take away from you, but it always has a cost at the other end. We started to learn about the difference between Austrian economics and Keynesian economics and fiscal spending and responsibility, and then more importantly, conservatism. It's the first time I've heard the term conservative, which is, you know, someone who conserves, someone who, you know, keeps things in a natural order, essentially. And I started to realize, huh, a lot of the things they're talking about are things that I think I identify with, you know. I, you know, believed in the Second Amendment. I was a military person. I believed in small government because historically the government has done all kinds of things to harm people when it got too big. I mean, you can even see what's happened with the African Americans throughout history. So I already understood that small government and people being able to defend themselves in the event that government turns on its people, these were things that were important to me. The more I started to look into it, I realized I'm not a Democrat at all. I don't subscribe to any of these beliefs. I don't subscribe to, you know, abortion and killing the unborn. I don't subscribe to high taxation to pay for other people. I don't subscribe to putting everybody on the payroll of government without providing any opportunity. While they talk about equality, they're talking about equality of outcome. And the only equality that should matter is the equality of opportunity. And as I started to dig more and more and more into this, my political opinions began to change over the years. And so I became a full-on Republican. Now, fast forward to 2015, Donald Trump is running for office. And initially, I was not going to vote for Donald Trump because I hated him my entire life. I was never a fan of Donald Trump. My father, however, was a big fan of Donald Trump. Growing up, he had all his books. He was a big supporter of him. He used to work for NJ Transit for many years when my father was alive.
Are you close to your father and mother right now?
Unfortunately, my father passed away when I was 16. And that's another thing. That's another thing that led to me joining the Air Force is when my father passed away, there weren't too many options. You know, the major breadwinner was gone. You know, I love this country. You know, I felt like it was a great opportunity to get in there. And I decided to join the Air Force. So losing my father was another one of the deciding factors, because if my father could have joined the military, he would have. But he had already had a family. He already had us at this point. He was much older, but I felt like it was the right thing to do. My mother, on the other hand, I love my mother. I talk to my mother every single day. And my mother is my biggest inspiration, because she had to sacrifice a lot for us to even be in this country, for you and I to even have this conversation on the phone, for her little boy to get up and run for office and to try and stand for something bigger than himself. This is an opportunity that would have never been possible had America not existed. It's like, look at what we could change and the amount of opportunity that America has put before us. There's so many things that can happen.
All right, Billy, listen, we have interviewed a number of black conservatives, and the common thread amongst all of them is that they were not born to conservatism. They were born to Democratic parents or farther left, but they asked questions. They didn't want to just take what was given to them because it just didn't make any sense to them. And this sounds like it's common for what has happened in your life. Is that true?
Yeah, I would say so. And to be honest, I would also say that going to the military also opened up my eyes, because I had a very naive view of the rest of the world. Because being in America, living in America, one of the greatest things about this country is that we're awarded so much privilege that even the poorest of the poor is far more privileged than many others across the world that have literally nothing. And there's always one direction you can go in this country, and that's up. And the truth about that is, after going overseas and meeting different people from many different walks of life, you can really understand that it's far more complicated than what we're led to believe. And one thing that a lot of our education system has put onto us is just this belief that we're all victims. African Americans referring to that we're victims, that all we've really amounted to was slavery, essentially. They diminished some of the great things that many African Americans have done. They even hid the facts from many of us that there were a lot of African Americans that took part in the creation and the foundation of the Republican Party in Ripon, Texas. Like, they don't talk about that. They don't talk about the first 29 African American senators all being Republican in the 1800s, as well as the first 27 African American congressmen. They were all Republicans. Up until this point, you know, I believed that Democrats have always been the best for minorities, and the truth is they're not. A lot of their policies tend to be very destructive, and I don't even think that the Democrats today are even the Democrats anymore. At this point, I believe that the Democrats have been infiltrated by very far left socialists, and dare I say, people that are supporters of a lot of the things that the CCP would like to promote in the United States. And it's a very scary prospect, a very scary future. But I'm also seeing lots of people that traditionally identified as Democrats shift to Republican or shift to Independent.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. The left, there are four major groups. You have Progressive, Communist, Socialist, and Democrats. And there really is no difference between the four anymore. They're all the same.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and that's one thing that I look to change. When I decided to get involved in office, it was after being motivated to run, after visiting a Trump rally that took place in New Jersey in January of last year. This is a state that I've been told has been deeply blue and practically no Republican exists. Only to see someone like Donald Trump come and completely sell out this stadium, hundreds of thousands of people in one place in the freezing cold almost, to see the president. It was the most mind-blowing thing I've ever experienced, let alone a Republican doing this in the state of New Jersey. It just was very eye-opening to me. There's a lot more Republicans in New Jersey than I think, and it was for the first time I didn't feel like I was isolated or crazy, you know, because friends would think that I was not a good person for identifying with conservative values or smaller government and a lot of the things that I believe in. And to be surrounded by so many, it shifted my perspective. And I said, you know, I can only imagine what else I could possibly do. And one of the gentlemen that that brought me to this event was Dr. Hector Castillo. He ran for Congress against my opponent back in 2016. And, you know, after him walking with me and being near me, he heard a lot of the things that I was saying. He said, Billy, I think you'd be a great candidate to run in this district. I've ran there before and I've heard you speak and you seem to be very well informed with a lot of the things going on, not just in New Jersey or the United States, but geopolitically and around the world. You know a lot of things, and I think you'd be a great asset to the 9th district. For someone like you and the things that you've experienced throughout your life, statistically shouldn't be at the level that you're at right now. And this is also based on what a lot of the Democrats tend to push. And he says, you know, I think you could unify people, especially the younger generation, and possibly lead us into a different direction because Pascal's not doing anything for us. And I thought about it for a couple of days. He offered his help and he said, anything you need, whether it's filling out the paperwork or getting started, I can help you with that. And he acted as a mentor as I went through this political process. And the more I learned, the more deeper I got involved, the more I realized how big the problem was. You see, my opponent, Bill Pascrell, he's been there for 24 years. And I've heard his name my entire life to the point that kids would try and make fun of me and call me Bill Pascrell instead of Billy Prempeh. So I was aware of his name, but I never physically seen him with my own eyes. I didn't even know what he looked like until I was 19. When I saw his face on a poster. But this guy has been in control of our city more than 24 years because he was in Congress 24 years, and then prior to that, he was mayor of our city.
Billy, I know you've reached a ripe old age of 31, but what can other young people learn from you if they want to get into leadership roles?
Well, one of the things that I would tell the younger generation is that you're never too young to get involved in politics. While you have to be 25 to run for federal office, that doesn't mean you can't get involved in volunteering or even helping other local candidates that you support get to where they need to be in office. The truth is that we're going to inherit the nation that our parents, our grandparents, and great parents are going to leave behind for us. And a lot of us are not aware of how politics work and where our place really lies inside of the political realm. We're going to have to pick up these pieces. We're going to have to be the next presidents, the next mayors, the next councilmen, the next surrogates, the next county clerks. We're going to be the people that are going to be in charge of dealing with waste management, dealing with planning, dealing with zoning and the agriculture. All these things that we've left in the lap of our parents, someone's going to have to do this. And if we don't do it, then we get people like my opponent, Bill Pascrell, who's been sitting in his chair for over 25 years, almost 40 years in politics, making an absolute multi-million dollar killing on the backs of every single one of us that don't know the wiser and are not getting involved. This is our country, and our parents put a lot on the line to give us the opportunity that we've got, whether it be working and putting their sweat into it, or even just laying a foundation, being a moral parent, or even just being a taxpayer. All these things contribute to the future that we're going to have to inherit, and we have to step up and get involved in our community. So that's what I would say.
Would you suggest that someone wanting to get into this maybe attach themselves to a mentor and learn?
Yes, absolutely. And the thing that's great about that is I have no problem with mentoring anyone that's looking to get involved in running for office. My phone number is on my website and people can literally call me if they have any issues. But another organization that I would direct a lot of people to is a group called Run Gen Z. They're an organization that is nationwide. And they're looking for young adults that are looking to get involved in running for office. They pair them with a mentor. They pair them with people who are already involved in politics, whether being elected or currently running. And they can guide and teach the next generation by giving them expertise and information to help lead them in their political careers. So the organization is called Run Gen Z. I am not affiliated with them. However, I do support them and I do intend on mentoring for them at some point in the future. But until then, if anyone has any questions and they would like to learn about their political process, I have no problem with speaking to anybody on the phone and breaking that down.
Fabulous. We have got to give to our younger generation. We cannot keep ignoring them. So, you're an outspoken advocate against Black Lives Matter. Tell me why.
Well, there's several reasons why I'm against Black Lives Matter. The concept of Black Lives Matter understandably makes a lot of sense. Yes, Black lives do matter. Everybody's life matters. And I totally agree with that. The problem with Black Lives Matter is the organization itself and what it has been used to stir about in our country. It's no longer about Black lives, because Black Lives Matter had to remove this from their website. They had a page that basically outlined the doctrine of what Black Lives Matter stand for. And in all honesty, it said nothing about Black men. It said nothing about Black fathers or Black boys. It said everything about Black gay people, Black women. And while all that's fine, there's no mention of anything about Black families. And the reason why is because they themselves are against the nuclear family. For those that are listening that don't know about the nuclear family, this is the two-parent household. One of the biggest problems within the African-American community, unfortunately, is the lack of strong men and the lack of strong fathers in the household right now. And pushing for the abolishment of the traditional nuclear family does nothing to benefit the African-American community. On top of that, the founders of the organization are admitted Marxists. They say that they're trained Marxists, and they have no shame in letting the world know that they stand for Marxism. Marxism has never worked. It is a horrible and very evil ideology that is responsible for the death of millions and millions of people. And we're seeing the effects of Marxism right now and what it's done in Cuba and in places like Venezuela. They're trying to bring these ideas here to the United States, and I don't agree with them. And a lot of Americans don't agree with them. Worst of all, the amount of African Americans that have been killed across the United States, they're utilizing the deaths of these people for political gain. They're raising millions and millions of dollars to the point that they're hosting Black Lives Matter protests in Japan. There's little to no Black people in Japan, and the ones that are there are most likely military troops or a far and few between African American born children. The point that I'm making, millions of dollars that are being made are not going to inner cities. They're not helping African-American families. In fact, some of the victims that they tend to support, like Breonna Taylor and Mike Garner, for example, their parents and, I mean, their families are not happy with their portrayal of Black Lives Matter. They've done nothing to help them, yet they've raised millions and millions of dollars off of their deaths. They're using this money to fund other Democrat candidates, and they're also responsible for billions of destruction all across the United States in numerous different cities during the summer riots shortly after the death of George Floyd. They have completely destroyed our country, and they're using this as a reason to try and stoke fear to make political change. And if you know anything about the definition of terrorism, terrorists use fear for political gain. And it seems that that's what Black Lives Matter is doing. Their founders are Marxists. They don't like this country, and they're trying to separate it. And they're taking an original message that sounded wholesome and good about trying to protect Black lives and trying to reduce the police violence, to now completely getting rid of police. All white people are bad, and trying to tear our country upside down. That's what Black Lives Matter really stands for today. And they're using this money for nefarious purposes. Patrice Cullors is one of the founders, just spent $1.4 million on a very, very beautiful luxury home, several homes, actually, in areas that also are nowhere near most of the minority communities. She's quite hypocritical about that. But they'll use the struggles of the struggles that are happening in inner cities every single day to line their pockets. And that's why I'm against it.
Billy, your race against your opponent, is this a race likely to be dominated by money, especially out-of-state money? And while we're on the topic, should it be illegal to pump money into races in districts you don't live in?
No, I don't think that this is a race that's going to be dominated by money. And I also disagree. I believe that money should be able to be put into districts that you don't live in. The reason, especially on congressional and Senate type races. On other races, I wouldn't agree so much, because that's other states getting interfered. However, since when you get to the halls of Congress, we are acting in a capacity where we're representing the federal government and the people back in our homes. This is a federal race, so I think that people should be able to get money from the outside in. However, when it comes to whether this race will be dominated by money or not, I don't think so, because my opponent, he raised, if I'm not mistaken, the last time I checked,
raised about $1.8 million in his last race, yet he spent over $1 million. He spent about $1.2 million in his last race against me. For some perspective, we raised $35,000 in the last race, and we spent only $15,000, and we were able to shift 33,250 people to voting for me. Now, here's the interesting part. Will he be able to do that for the unaffiliated? Absolutely not. Will Bill Pascrell even be able to make it until the election in November of 2022? I don't even know if he'll be able to make it that far. I think that he may end up retiring possibly, but let's say that's not the case. I don't think that money is going to play too much of a big factor. However, on my end, I will need as much money as possible to compete against him, because I am going up against the machine. I am going up against a guy with 24 years of connections, backing, and support that he's been entrenched with for many, many years. So on my end, we will need the funds to help get the word out. Despite that, we've been very fiscally responsible with our previous campaign. With the little that we had, we were able to make it go a very, very long way. So I believe that everything that people can bring to the campaign will be used to the max to get the maximum effectiveness in this race.
All right. Well, that's about it for our time today, Billy. I really appreciate your time with us. And we look forward to following your race and drinking a toast to your victory.
Amen. Non-alcoholic, hopefully.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Billy, I do thank you. This has been an unusual interview with the technical issues and everything, but I think we'll get it just beautifully.
I think this was great. I had a lot of fun on this interview. I think this is easily one of my top four favorite interviews so far now.